This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to Books Uncovered, an exciting conversation about books and literary events, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bella.
Over the next half hour, we'll dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library. Kia ora, thanks for tuning in. It's our first show of the year in 2026, and Bella is still on holiday, lucky Bella, and I am fortunate enough to have lovely Caitlin in the studio with me. Kia ora, Caitlin.
Kia ora, Holly. Kia ora, everyone.
Yeah, so you've been on the show a couple of times now, eh?
Oh, just my second time.
Oh, second. Yeah. I was thinking it was like your third. So Caitlin's a really avid reader and thought it was a good opportunity to pick her brain a little bit.
It's great to be back.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about classic literature because I feel like summer's a really good time to look back in time at the great writers of the 20th century, perhaps, maybe even the 21st century.
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? What maketh the classic? What do we call a classic?
Yeah.
Because modern classics are being written every year.
Exactly. And it has had me thinking, what is going to be a classic that I'm reading now? Like, I've been reading the Ian McEwan, What We Can Know, and I'm thinking, you know, this is one of his, I don't know how many books he's written, but I'm thinking, is this going to be a classic?
Absolutely. I think all his books are. You know how some authors, they just, all of them just get lumped in, anything by author X, it's a classic.
Yeah, so we don't mean classic as in classical Greek or, what do you think, Caitlin, would define a classic in the canon?
Yeah, I have been thinking about this a wee bit.
I've come up with that it's a book that stands the test of time.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, it sort of has like a universal appeal.
Yep, and universal themes, big themes, themes that transcend.
Yeah.
The transcend time.
Yeah.
Love, death, money,
power,
status.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All those very human things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah, did you want to talk first about, you've brought in two books today and I can see they're really lovely Penguin editions, which just bring it more into that, like, the classic literature mode.
Yeah, they've got beautiful covers, lovely books. Well, the first book I bought in was Wide Sargasso Sea by Jean Rhys. This is a book I remember seeing on my grandparents' bookshelf and being really fascinated by the title. Like, it kind of almost didn't make sense to me. Why is the Garso Sea? and we were actually talking about this over our summer holidays, weren't we, Holly? We mentioned it. So it was kind of topmost in my mind. And it is a book that is a prequel to Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre. It's the story of the first Mrs. Rochester, the mad wife in Jane Eyre, who lives in the attic, and we never really see much of her. So Jean Rhys sort of imagines what her story is and sort of brings her to life. It's set in Jamaica and Dominica in the 1830s and 40s.
Which is where she's brought up.
Yeah. It gives her a very unique perspective and voice.
Creole.
The term that was used to refer to, it's kind of a complicated term because it was used for mixed race people in the Caribbean, but also just for white people living in the Caribbean too.
Yeah.
So it turns out that Mrs. Rochester is sort of living in a derelict estate, formerly rich, but that time has passed and it is a dark, queasy, oppressive story, very atmospheric with this like oppressive, relentless sunshine of the Caribbean, which is always something I love. I am a big sucker for books where there's kind of like a woozy, drunk sunshine, which like renders everything kind of like nauseous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. It's tropical gothic, I call this.
That's a wonderful term.
It's also, it's also a great music genre, isn't it?
Be Dunedin one day.
Yeah. Oh, it's kind of like that song Janine by Alain Vittel.
Oh, I don't know it.
There's one for our listeners to look up by great Dunedin band Alain Vittel, their song Janine.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes. Danny's band.
Yeah. there's a house fire. There's the killing of a mentally disabled brother. There's emotional imbalance, and then she's like locked in an attic in wherever she is in Britain, mental health struggles, and it puts a totally new reading on Jane Eyre. And if you have read this, you can't interpret her character in Jane Eyre the same way anymore. She's kind of like changed the meaning in a sense. She becomes a more fully rounded, sympathetic character.
Had you read Jane Eyre before you approached this text?
Well, not since I had been in high school.
Okay.
So I can't claim a great familiarity with it, but I might go back and read it, actually. And I do regret not having reread it before jumping into Wide Sicasso Sea. It would have meant more to me, probably. Mm. But it works as a standalone book, too. I was expecting something a lot more straightforward. I wasn't expecting something so kind of stylistically unique and challenging. Very, very interesting indeed. And it's based on a classic and has become a classic in its own right.
Yeah.
It's generating its own fan fiction, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's quite an incredible writer. I've only read Goodnight Midnight by her.
Tell me about that.
It sort of seems semi-autobiographical, like it's about this woman who moves to Paris and gets a job. I think she goes for this job interview and then, you know, she's really nervous, and then when she's trying to leave the building, accidentally locks herself into a cupboard. But she's a huge sort of alcoholic, which Jean Rhys was in real life. I think there was this... if I'm not mistaken, she kind of dropped off the radar for a really long time, and then the BBC did a radio show on one of her books, and then people sort of discovered her again, and then they went to look for her, and she was living in a caravan and in quite destitute situation. But yeah, a really fascinating woman and life. Like, I think, she was like married three times.
I think this might have been published almost posthumously. She wrote the last few lines on her deathbed. They kind of coaxed her into just finishing it off. So the book you were talking about, she's like locked in a cupboard the whole time.
No, not the whole time. She's just kind of a bit like, you know, down and out in Paris. I mean, I don't mean to like reference George Orwell, but
But
I just did. Well, you know, it's that set in 1920s Europe. A woman trying to make it on her own, but having her own addictions. Quite nice to have a story that's not, you know, just the young male trying to find himself in the world from that era, which, I don't think there's enough. I mean, there probably was more books, but it was Ford Maddox that... sort of discovered Jean Rhys, and he was, a big forefront of the modernist movement, I believe. Maddox Ford.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I think he published one of her writings first.
It's interesting when you realise how many women are writing in previous generations struggled with alcohol and drug addiction, because we think of it as being such a masculine problem in some ways, and there's some surprise when you find out, like Anna Kavan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, she was a heroin addict. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember reading this Guardian article years ago, you know, when I was in my 20s, something like this, and, you know, it was about Carson McCullers and Jean Reese and all these women who were complicated women, you know, that didn't just in their time get married, have children. They must have had such a struggle to be able to be their authentic writing self.
Absolutely. To have a room of one's own.
Yes, yes. Well, well, Virginia Woolf, I think because she was so upper class, I'm not that interested in her stories, even though I know that she's such a prolific writer and an important writer. Like, I think I'd be more interested in reading like her nonfiction than you know, Mrs. Dalloway and all of this sort of stuff. But we should be moving on, because we're gonna
but,
run
you know, she is interesting to talk about as a classic author
absolutely.
Too.
And it's who a lot of people know as being the woman writer of that era as well. I mean, I've talked about it before, but like, yeah, Carson McCullers is by far my favourite author, who was only 23 when she published her first book, and she's American writer though, not British.
Are you talking about her today?
Well, no, actually I am going to talk about Toni Morrison, who's a brilliant woman. So she was born in the 30s, American, black American woman. She passed away actually in 2019, so not that long ago. She was the first black female editor for fiction at Random House in New York in the 1960s. And so she played like this vital role in bringing black literature to the mainstream. A lot of people will be familiar with The Bluest Eye and The Beloved. But The Beloved was made into a film with Oprah Winfrey in the 1990s. And she's won, you know, Nobel Prizes and all sorts of prizes because she's incredible. So I'm going to talk about a book called Sula, which is her second book. I just wanted to say about her, because I was looking up, so her work's praised for addressing the harsh consequences of racism in the US and the black American experience. When she was about 2 years old, her family's landlord set fire to her house because they couldn't afford to pay rent. And her family responded to what she called this bizarre form of evil by laughing at the landlord rather than falling into despair. And it's, yeah, she's sort of, Morrison said that this response showed how to keep your integrity and claim your own life in the face of such cruelty. And it's that kind of attitude that's definitely like woven into this book. So, yeah, it's set in a fictional town of Medallion in Ohio during the beginning of the 20th century, and it follows the story of two young girls, Nell and Sula, who share each other's secrets and dreams in the poor black Midwest. Sula runs away to live her dreams and Nell gets married. So the book's set in two parts and it's narrated by Nell. And yeah, it's just those delicate moments about humanity. There's fires, there's some horrendous things that happen, and the way the writer just kind of dances across them and then moves on. Like, there's this one event, it's like they keep referencing it throughout the book between the characters because it's a shared secret. I mean, should I say what it is? Because it's pretty,
No, we don't want to.
It's a shared secret. And anyway, the way that moment is captured and brought up within the book is done so well. Like, it's her craft of leaving all these gaps so that the reader kind of meets her there and meets the characters there. It's like you've really pulled in into the text. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed reading this, because after reading so many contemporary books of late, especially working, you know, as a librarian at the Athenaeum Library, who bring you the show, it's really nice to go back and read someone whose craft is just impeccable. It's quite a short book. There's all these underlying things that are very clever about it. She uses what is it called? I've lost the word. It's like the opposites.
Dichotomies?
Yeah.
Juxtapositions.
It's like kind of irony in the name of the character. So we meet a grown man named Boy Boy. We meet a pale man named Tar Baby. We meet a woman everyone calls Teapot's Mama because being his mother was precisely her major failure. I can't remember the word. I'm so sorry. Oh, antiphraxis? Antiphraxis, yeah, which usually is an ironic or humorous use of words in senses opposite to the generally accepted meanings. But yeah, you also have read Jazz by her.
Yeah.
And there's this kind of rhythm to it. It was a long time ago that I read that. Do you remember much about that?
I remember it was, dark themes dealt with a wise, light hand.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly how I'd say that this book is as well. And this is set in the 1920s and 30s, and the community live on a hill, but it's called Bottom because when the slaves were granted their freedom, they were tricked by the white man who said, you can have some land at the bottom, and then said, oh, if God is looking down from heaven, he sees the bottom first, which is the hill. And as a book...
So there we've got some more antiphraxis.
Exactly. And so, yeah, as the book goes on, and then you're obviously thinking, well, as by the time it hits the 1960s, white people want to live on the hill because it's got the views and there's not so much of a reliance on farming, on the weather and the wind. And yeah, it's a beautiful book. Definitely it's made me want to go back and read Jazz and even perhaps watch Beloved, the film, which I did watch the trailer for, and it looks, I mean, just that era of filmmaking, it hasn't stood the test of time in the same way that the books do.
When was it made?
In the 90s. Okay. I think it's like Oprah Winfrey when she's quite young is the main character in it.
Well, you've made me really want to read...
Sula.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a short book.
Yeah, it's pretty short. Yeah, almost kind of novella-sized. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read it pretty fast.
I think it's very interesting that we've both chosen women authors writing from a non-white majority perspective. Well, your author is a black woman and mine's a white Creole woman writing in a post-colonial way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's, I don't know, I guess I wouldn't be so tempted to go back to classic literature and read a male story. You know, like, I really don't have any time for James Joyce, for instance. Like, I know he was brilliant and he only uses the same word a couple of times in Ulysses and isn't that his feat and how clever he is, but... Again, it's a male story as well. I don't know.
I have to say I'm also interested in male stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I feel like...
Know thy enemy.
But there's a saturation there, you know. It's like especially growing up through high school and even university in a sense, reading, you know, the canon. It's definitely more male dominated.
I feel I can get put off by something if it's too highly praised.
Me as well.
Yeah, Ulysses, I kind of came to from a place of it being almost sort of shoved down my throat and I sort of rejected it for that reason.
I read a portrait of a young boy.
Portrait of an artist
of a young boy. Yeah, I read that one. It was okay. I mean, it's the same with... Tolstoy. I've read The Death of Ivan Ilyich, but I'll never read War and Peace. It's like
I may.
I'll read the slim version.
Well, I actually have a male author to talk about next. I have Graham Greene's Brighton Rock. And
brilliant film.
I haven't seen the film.
No, I haven't loved it.
Italo Calvino has some interesting takes on what maketh a classic that maybe if we have time we can talk about later, but we probably won't. He says it's possible to have like your own classic. He leaves space for you to sort of like invent your own classics, even if they're not generally accepted. And I mean, I'm not saying that this is the case for this, because everybody, like Graham Greene, is totally part of the canon. But for me, it's what he calls a talisman and a touchstone. It was the first Graham Greene I read. It was given to me by someone I had a crush on at the time. So I read it with a very warm and open mind. and I was just really taken by it. It is set in Brighton in the 30s and deals with British gang culture. Little punks with knives roaming around being up to no good. And it contrasts that with a prevailing Catholicism. And it's the tension between these things. There's a lot of morals being explored, youth alienation, violence, nihilism. And the tone is very compelling, this seaside town, this pleasure-seeking town filled with tourists and tea houses, contrasted with Pinky, our little hoodlum, our little knife-wielding hoodlum.
It's funny because Brighton does have that sort of, I don't know, atmosphere to this day, you know, like as London on the sea. Like it's all buy some hard candy and go on the Ferris wheel or the roller coaster, but then there is this sort of seedy underbelly as well.
I wasn't there long enough to pick up on that.
Yeah, when I first went there, I was like, oh, it's so lovely. And I was like, oh, it's a real darkness there. Yeah. Well, my sister used to live there, so I'd go there almost, yeah, like once a month.
It's been a long time since I read it.
Have you read other stuff by him?
I have. I was actually doing a Google last night trying to sort of separate his books into categories, because I feel like he's got a lot of kind of diplomacy overseas, a lot of kind of governmental people doing things in like Haiti and the Congo, and oh, that makes me just want to yawn. I'm not interested in that. But then he's got Travels with My Aunt, which is a great deal of fun, and what's the one about the comedians?
I don't know. I've actually never read him. It's one
of
those.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, he's kind of I guess it can be hard to know where to start, because he does have such a huge catalogue. I was spending some time last night doing some research and separating his books into categories, and I think some of the ones that I thought were dry diplomacy are not. I think they're very funny. I think they're farces, and I think they're very readable, and I might give them a go, because I appreciate his craftsmanship. He's a very good writer.
When was this book published, just out of interest? Because I feel like all the books that we've brought in today are from the same era.
Well, this was published in 1938.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, Sula was published in 1973.
And White Sagasso Sea is 1966.
Yeah, okay. Oh, so we're spanning a bit of time.
A little bit of time. But, yeah, what maketh the classic?
What maketh the classic? Universal themes. What are we reading now that will end up falling into that category, I wonder? You know, and are there New Zealand writers like Catherine Chidji? Will she become a classic, you know? I mean, she has so much attention, then, or Eleanor Caton.
Will she be a New Zealand classic or an international classic? Yeah. And is there a difference? And
I was looking
at a voted by the public list of classics, 100 classic books, and I was keeping my eye out for the modern ones to see what people were voting for.
And did you?
And we had White Teeth.
Oh, yes.
And
Zadie Smith, is it?
Yes. Yeah. White Teeth by Zadie Smith. And The Secret History by Donna Tartt.
Oh, yeah.
And Midnight's Children by Salman Rushdie.
Yes.
I mean, Salman Rushdie is...
But then that's written in the 80s, wasn't it?
Okay. We're talking more modern than that.
I'm okay. Like, we're going really century.
Okay.
But we have 1 minute.
We
left.
Have 1 minute.
Who's writing in the 21st century that would potentially be? This could be a fun game.
I hope everybody at home is thinking about it. I don't know, things like, I don't know, Visit from the Goon Squad. Will that like make it?
Oh, I don't know.
By Jennifer Egan. Maybe it's too fun. Maybe it's too light.
Miranda July.
Who can say? If only we could time travel into the future.
I mean, what? In 20 years' time, I guess it's something that like, yeah, it's. I guess that brings up the question of, does a certain amount of time need to pass before something becomes a classic?
Yes.
I suppose it does, because it has to transcend that time.
And you can't know what's going to make it. You don't know what's going to date as well, like as you were talking about with that film.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It just doesn't correlate to the new world.
And you see books being written now that you know are not going to be classics.
Absolutely. They're just for entertainment. Well, I guess, yeah, we've run out of time, so we'll leave it there. Caitlin, it's been so awesome having you
it's
on
been
the studio.
Wonderful. Anytime.
And yeah, we'll see you guys all soon. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
Books Uncovered. Exciting conversations about books and literary events. Brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
Join us, Holly and Bella, every second Saturday at 12 p.m. as we dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library.
That's Books Uncovered.
Saturdays at 12 on ORFM and online at oar.org.nz.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.